what would you pair this movie with? Anything within the human experience?
Probably death is what I would pair it with.
Oh my goodness.
I think if this movie and then it ends and that just rolls right into my death, I think I'd be okay with that. One, like the last movie I ever watched is Southland Tales, which that's pretty badass. And second, like because it is a movie about the end of all things, that I think that's thematically resonant. Hmm. So I go with death.
You're going to be on your deathbed and say, Sam, pull up Southland Tales.
Please, my love.
My last request.
And honestly, it's probably the only way I could get her to watch it. Is her, like,
this is an epic Los Angeles crime saga.
You're going to have to wear a bulletproof vest. From the creator of Donnie Darko.
Take him down.
Fascist pigs!
Dwayne Johnson, Sean William Scott, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Mandy Moore, and Justin Timberlake.
It had to be this way.
I know.
A film by Richard Kelly, Southland Tales.
There'd be a lot less violence if everyone just got a little more cardio.
Rated R.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Show Me the Movies with Justin and Nick, a movie podcast hosted by lifelong cousins / buddies that digs into movies that mean something to us and our guests. I'm Justin.
I'm Nick. We have a guest. Who's our guest?
Do I have to introduce myself?
Yeah.
We can introduce either.
No,
we have Austin
Yoder.
It's
fine.
I don't think we've ever said the name of the guest. I think
no, Nick always
them.
Says, who do we have? And then he just like looks at the guests.
And
like,
I stare at them uncomfortably until
I can do that. Yeah. My name is Austin Yoder.
Amazing. Awesome. I'm pumped to have Austin here. And I'm pumped to talk about
We have Yoders
Tales.
And Leekties in the room here. That's our mom's maiden names because we're from Northern Indiana.
Yeah, for real. We all took Fluid Karma before the pod, so this is going to be interesting.
Oh, I feel wow. good. I feel good.
What color did you get?
Dude, I'm talking to God right now. It's great.
I bleed, so I got red.
Oh, nice. So we're talking Southland Tales, but first, Austin, this is the second guest that we've done this with, only number two. Tell us four things about yourself. It can be literally anything.
Yeah, of course. Four things about myself. One, I have a wife and a daughter.
Awesome.
Who I love very much. Two, I, in my spare time, try to write movies and TV shows.
Cool.
Kind of what I always wanted to do.
That's cool.
Three, I'm exceptionally good at throwing things up in the air and catching them in my mouth.
Amazing.
And four, it's always the fourth one that trips you up.
That's why I did four
instead of three.
It's
inevitably going to be super.
Can you have someone else throw stuff into your mouth? Like, are you good at that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean that entirely depends on
how good the throw is.
Of course,
for sure.
Of course, there's a margin of error that I can overcome.
Yeah.
But if the throw's too bad, there's really nothing I can do. You're only as good as the throw to a certain extent. And fourth, I'm the least athletic person in a super athletic family.
Oh, wow. But you're still really good at catching stuff in your mouth, so it's not
true.
Totally unathletic.
Yeah, I wasn't able to ever monetize that, though, unfortunately.
Dang it.
Was your family able to monetize their athleticism?
My brother was an Olympian.
What? Okay.
Yeah, my brother's an Olympic gymnast.
What?
You should have him on the podcast.
Seriously, what the heck?
Does he like movies?
He does like movies.
Cool. What does he do gymnast-wise? I know nothing about gymnastics.
Yeah, well, now he's retired now, so he does nothing. But previously, I mean, he was like a pommel horse specialist.
Oh, my God.
He went to Tokyo in 2021.
Dang.
Oh, yeah.
This That's podcast cool. is becoming too much about Alec. We're going to cut anything about Alec. Anything about the person
you're like,
who's
nope, we don't need
overshadowed me my whole life.
Yeah, you're like, stop.
No, I don't mean it, Alec. I love you.
Yeah, screw that guy. We're moving on. So we're talking about Southland Tales. Southland Tales, which is directed by Richard Kelly, starring, I'm just going to go through a long list here. Dwayne The Rock Johnson as Boxer Santoros / Jericho Kane. Sarah Michelle Gellar as Krista Kapowski / Krista Now. Sean William Scott as Roland Taverner or Ronald Taverner. Mandy Moore as Madeline Frost Santoros. Justin Timberlake as Private Pilot Aveline. And then also with Wallace Shawn, Kevin Smith, Amy Poehler, John Lovitz, Will Sasso, the guy who was on Vine, Justin, who always did the lemon in the mouth thing. Do you know what I'm talking about?
No.
Oh, yeah. He would always do these vines, and then he'd go like, oh, and he'd have a lemon, and he'd like spit it out of his mouth.
Whoa.
Eli Roth, the director of some movies I haven't seen, and who is also the Bear Jew in Inglourious Basterds, as man who gets shot on the toilet. Yeah. Anyone I missed there in the little cast list that's notable?
Oh, shoot. Wood Harris is in it. If you've ever seen Remember the Titans.
I have. It's been a minute.
Okay. Okay.
John Lovitz. You missed that John Lovitz is in this movie?
I thought I said John Lovitz. I might have. I might have missed him.
We'll cut it out if
anyway,
you did.
Anyway, no, we're good.
Will
the Sasso? Do you guys know who Will Sasso is?
Oddly enough, so Will Sasso
has had a very good career. He's the lemon vine guy.
I'm an idiot. Okay.
Because he's also he was in the new Three Stooges.
Whoa.
He was in a great show called Louder Milk that I would highly recommend with Ron Livingston.
Not heard of it.
So Will Sasso's done great stuff. Nothing better than this movie, but...
Well,
but that's not fair. It's the best movie ever made.
I don't know him from this Vine thing, Nick, but he's in How I Met Your Mother in a small role.
Okay.
And as you know, I'm obsessed with that show.
Yeah. So box office wise, this was released in 60 something theaters in 2007.
I might be able to guess.
Yeah.
Almost to the number how much money this movie made.
So it bombed at... I believe it's pronounced Cannes Film Festival. did not do well.
Did it play a director's cut or something at Cannes?
So it was the cut that they were working with.
It was an in-progress cut that Richard Kelly submitted on like a whim, thinking they're not going to show it. Like they're not even going to say yes. I think he just did it. And they were like, no, we absolutely want to show it. I think he had so much goodwill that was carried over from
Donnie Darko.
That I think they were probably just excited to have like the next Richard Kelly movie.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's sort of infamously bad in terms of one of the most disastrous showings in the history
of the festival.
Yeah.
Which is crazy, of course, because
that is crazy.
It's pretty
notorious. As I said, this is the best movie of all time.
Also, I'd like to point out how funny it is at those festivals and stuff, like time recorded standing ovations after some movie show. Ugh. Like they had a 10-minute standing ovation.
And if you hear it's like five, people are like, ooh, that's not a good
sign.
Yeah,
that's bad. Where in actuality, if there's a 5-minute standing ovation for something, I'd be like, what the heck are we doing?
So it was released in 60-something theaters in 2007 after having had that experience, got cut down a little bit, was released in not many theaters. The budget was an estimated $17 million. Any ideas on the worldwide gross?
I know the answer to that.
What is it?
I'm obsessed with this movie. It made like $375,000.
Yep. Oh, wow. $375,000. Not much.
I had like a thing in the back of my mind, like maybe this didn't make back its budget. Like in terms, it made under $17 million, but I didn't think by that much.
Yeah. So just a very brief, I took a stab at writing a little plot synopsis. I said, following a 2005 nuclear attack in Texas, the United States expands the Patriot Act, GAG, creates totalitarian surveillance agency, USIDENT, and joins World War III along with Iraq, Iran, Syria, North Korea, and Afghanistan. We find ourselves in 2008, Los Angeles, where conservative movie star Boxer Santoros and his psychic girlfriend Krista Now try to navigate humanity's final days. Also, a wounded military veteran posing as a cop has to deal with a doppelganger and figure out why his reflection in the mirror is lagging. And a tech oligarch figured out perpetual motion with a thing called fluid karma, and he's trying to rule the world with it, and there's a presidential election. What to add... Austin, what would you add?
We're not. You would describe her as
a psychic. Yeah,
I would describe her as a porn star. I think.
Yeah,
she's exactly a porn star.
Yes. Well, you can't leave out. I mean, those two words together, the greatest combination of words of all time. But you did leave out that. Yeah.
Okay. Left out porn star. Anything else?
Barack Obama's nowhere to be seen in this movie.
I mean,
what the hell?
I think
2008.
I think that this is a. I think that's a good, very simple telling of what happens in the movie. I think it's sort of just about how our hubris is going to undo all of us eventually. It's a movie about the end of the world.
It's uplifting.
It's very 2006. I feel like at this time, there are a lot of stories about the world ending and like the Mayan calendar in 2012 ending.
Oh, gosh.
Well, yeah. And I mean, It's a very post 9/11 movie in a very literal way. Like, he wrote the first draft before 9/11. That happens.
Really?
And he rewrote it to include a lot of the, like, political storylines and everything.
U.S. ident.
So this movie is a direct, like, the movie we see is a direct result of 9/11 happening. And so, which obviously was a very apocalyptic time for a lot of people. So this takes some of those things that people were worried about to, I won't necessarily say their logical conclusion, but like a conclusion.
Like something they, a conclusion. They could see, like, not that far off from happening.
So, Austin, when, where, how many times have you seen this movie? When was the first time you saw this movie? And then how many times have you seen it since?
Absolutely. So the first time I saw it was probably 2019, maybe.
Cool.
I have a friend who told me, you have to see this movie. This is the most insane movie I've ever seen in my entire life. We have to watch it together. So I went and visited him in Illinois, and we watched it. And I remember being like, yeah, that movie's bananas. And I remember we laughed a lot and enjoyed it, and I could not stop thinking about it.
It has a way of, like, weaseling itself into your brain. Just
here's
speaking
what I'll
personally.
Say. It does, absolutely. I've been sort of saying throughout, like, this is the best movie of all time. I want to be clear, like, unironically, I think this is the best movie of all time. This
and
is
I love
my
that.
Favorite movie, and I've probably, conservatively, 15 times.
Dang.
Okay.
I've seen it. And it's not a short movie.
No,
it's not.
And when I watch it, I'm watching the festival cut as opposed to did you both watch the theatrical cut?
Yes.
Which for your first time makes sense.
Mm. So you can find the festival cut somewhere.
Oh yeah. So Arrow Video put out
Arrow Video. They're coming in clutch.
They put out a 2K restoration of it with both it has both theatrical and the festival cut. And so, yeah.
Cool. I know Arrow from doing the director's cut of Black Hat, which is another movie that doesn't get the respect it deserves, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about this movie. Like, I've seen it 15 times. It's the most, for me, rewarding movie on rewatches of anything I've ever seen.
I could
see. If we were really going to talk about this movie, you would have had to watch it like 5 times. But we should do a podcast after every single time that you watch this movie. Because it is, I think, the text is so rich. And it is like text. This is basically a subtext-free movie. That's part of what makes it so amazing.
What do you mean it's subtext-free?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I think this movie is very in your face about everything that's happening. Now, whether that makes sense to you, having only seen it one time, is different.
So it's in your face, but it does feel like rewatches would help you understand more.
I think narratively, yes. But I think it's the type of movie where the characters kind of tell you how they're feeling and thinking. But narratively, sort of like...
Well, like, there's just so much happening. So the first time, especially for me, when I watch a movie like this, I'm just letting everything wash over me. And it's just like, I don't even know what's going on. I'm just like trying to experience.
And honestly,
this.
it's a good way to watch this movie every time. And I mean, it is the type of movie, and Donnie Darko is the same way, where you can go read a lot about it, and people have put together exactly what everything means, and there's a prequel graphic novel series that you can read.
We're talking about the prequel graphic novel
yeah,
series.
Yeah, of course. And that's the thing, is like, this movie is a sequel to a graphic novel that basically came out in tandem with it. And so if it doesn't make sense, it's not really supposed to. If you haven't consumed all the media that's been created for it.
That's why it starts at chapter 4 through 6.
Yeah, because chapters 1 through 3 are the graphic novel.
Okay.
Justin, when did you first see this movie?
Yesterday, in between watching two movies.
Justin was watching this movie. Tyler and I came over. We watched two movies, and we left, and then Justin finished this movie.
Yeah.
It's a little wild.
What was sandwiched in between this movie? First of all, I mean, you didn't watch it all at once, which is horribly offensive.
I felt scared to say that in front of you.
Austin's no longer talking to you on the pod.
I knew what time we were going to be done hanging out roughly, and I was like, I don't think I have time to watch a 2.5 hour movie, so I got to cut this in half roughly.
Yeah.
We watched The Empty Man, which is our friend Tyler's one of his favorite movies, which
that's
I really like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Enjoyed it.
So that, and then they had never seen Risky Business, so I was like, we got to watch
Risky Business was amazing. It blew my socks off. Because I was expecting a John Hughes-style 80s teen suburb comedy, and I got a Michael Mann-style 80s teen suburb comedy, and I was like, yeah, this is amazing. Anyway.
Southland Tales.
This is not a Risky Business podcast.
John, it's like an update of the other movies.
I saw this last Thursday night. Yeah. I watched it at night, and I was like, what?
Nick's first reaction to me was, I cannot wait to hear what you have to say about this movie. I was like, what is this movie going to be? I really had no idea what this movie was going to be.
It has been on my watch list for a long time. And when we were coordinating this podcast, Austin, one of the movies that you pitched to do was Southland Tales. And I was like, let's definitely do that one because I've really wanted to watch that one for a long time. And I knew not that much about it, but I knew it was Richard Kelly and I knew it was weird. So I was like, let's do that one.
Yeah, I mean, the movie was so it basically ended Richard Kelly's career.
Seriously?
Yeah, he's done practically nothing since then.
He did The Box, right?
But that was in production, or at least in pre-production, by the time this movie even came out.
Hmm.
So it feels like they kind of let him make that movie, and then he hasn't done anything in the last 16 years. Although, if you read interviews with him, what he's trying to do is more Southland Tales.
I've noticed that. He is very active online, and he's really he really likes Southland Tales.
Which is awesome. Like, I think there's a lot of people who, with something that was so disastrous, just from a pure money-making perspective, and critically, although it's being reappraised by a lot of people.
Sure.
It is amazing that he has stood so firmly by the movie and is like, this is my favorite thing I've ever done. And he's right.
I wish I was aware enough I was just a kid when this movie came out. So I wish I could have seen the marketing campaign for this movie. That would have been really
interesting. I assume there wasn't much of one, right? Considering the amount of theaters it came out in.
Yeah, I mean, you can watch the trailer for it. I mean, I think part of the issue and part of the reason it only ended up in 60 theaters, although people bought it coming out of Cannes, so there was potential that was seen there. But I will say, I think it's a very hard movie to market, and I'll be really interested in our conversation because I also think it's a hard movie to convey just how good it is in talking about it. It really is one of those kind of see it to believe it type movies.
Yeah.
Because it's more than the sum of its parts.
Yeah.
So we like to talk about our feelings here. So what feelings do you feel while watching this movie? And I'm going to ask because you've seen it 15 times and because it's odd and because there's a lot going on. Did what you feel while watching it change from the first time you watched it to now, or is it a similar thing?
No, it's definitely changed. Like I said, this is a movie that I think has to be repeatedly watched to really appreciate it. So I would say my initial reaction was, that was weird, that was confusing, that was funny. And then the more I've watched it, I'm sort of in awe of it as just like a piece of art, I think, for a number of reasons. One being, and a lot has been written about this movie in terms of it's oddly prophetic in a lot of ways. And I think it, not that none of these topics were discussed in movies prior to then, but it's a movie about government surveillance and police brutality and celebrity worship and like the unholy matrimony of like celebrity and politics. And so there's a lot of topics in this movie that you could make a movie about right now and you'd be like, yeah, that's incredibly relevant. And so the movie was very ahead of its time. And so I do love that it had this vision of what the future was going to be. And I think in a lot of ways, despite the fact that the movie is one of those very near future movies, it takes place in 2008, I do think it oddly predicted kind of 2025 in some really interesting ways.
Yeah.
And then as a writer myself, like I feel very jealous when I watch the movie. Like I think
like I want to make a giant movie that bombs.
Well, I just think so much of, especially in the industry now, it's all about kind of like marketability and palatability. Mm-hmm. Like how much will this make and will people like it and understand it? And so I am jealous of kind of the freedom of a guy who was just like, I'm going to make exactly my vision. I think you have a lot of movies that are made by young directors where you're like, there's not a vision there, or there's not good direct, like there's not strong directorial choices being made. And I think regardless of how you feel about this movie, choices are being made constantly.
They are being made.
Yep. Richard Kelly had a very clear idea of the movie he wanted to make, and he made it. And I love that.
I didn't see a lot that I was like, oh, I bet that was a studio note.
No, definitely
yeah,
not.
Definitely not, no.
Justin, what did this movie make you feel?
Confused, but then like halfway through once, or like honestly like 30 minutes in, once you kind of get how this movie works a little bit, then I was like, I'm amazed that this movie is a thing. I've never seen anything like this. So I'm like,
sure.
I'm amazed that this exists.
Yeah.
I said at times in this movie, I felt seen in the sense of particularly relating to like the Patriot Act, US Ident,
sure,
and all that stuff where I'm like, dang. Yeah. And like movies, not many movies, I think, talk about this and get at this very well. And some other things that I'm sure we'll talk about with like celebrity and politics and that kind of thing. I also felt dirty, gross, confused, and sad. Like those were my main emotions, which is what I think kept me from really liking it. And right after I watched it, I was like, I don't love this. But then retroactively, I got addicted to reading about it,
yeah,
and to listening. I think I listened to like 3 podcast episodes of people talking about it.
Yeah.
And I was like, dang. And I did have a similar experience in college when I watched Donnie Darko, where I'm like, I'm going to read about this. I think the difference, there are differences in degrees in the sense of Donnie Darko I enjoy more and like just hits on some themes that really resonate with me, and the whole aesthetic and everything really gets to me. And then this, I was like, intellectually, I'm liking it. My emotions, I don't know if I can say I enjoy it, but then I was like, I'm going to read about it because it's fascinating to me.
Sure. And I think all the feelings that you're describing are a feature, not a bug. Like, I think that means you're interacting with the movie, right? Like, you should be feeling all of those things. And I think you're intended to. Mm-hmm. Now, how that translates to, yes, enjoyment or rewatchability or whatever that is, yeah, is one thing. But I don't think it's an accident that you feel that way.
For sure. Oh, yeah. So what to you, Austin, resonates as true about this movie? True in the broadest sense of the word. True to real life. True emotionally. True spiritually. Anything. What to you resonates as true?
I mean, I think it's actually the perfect segue from what you were saying. Like, I think the movie is very in tune with the fact that life is ridiculous and life is dirty and convoluted and confusing. And the characters are all experiencing that and realizing that more and more as the movie goes on. And I think we kind of get to vicariously experience those things ourselves. So I think we're in a time right now where there's such a premium put on like subtlety, nuance, minimalism. Like those things are, I think, very – when people talk about the best movies that are out there right now, that's not exclusively true. But I think those are things that people tend to gravitate toward. I mean, even just thinking about – I've listened to the podcast. Like I think – Come On, Come On is a great example of a film that is very measured and subtle. And it's a beautiful film. But I like that this movie has no interest in being that. And sort
maximalist.
It's extremely maximalist. And I think embraces the fact that like life is absurd and we're all absurd people doing absurd things. And we have to figure out how to get through that or respond to it.
I like that. I didn't think about it in that way, but it's true. The maximalist feel to it, or the intentionality behind it. And yeah, that is definitely a current thing of more minimalist, more subtle equals people are obsessed about a movie, which is, I like that too. I tend to find some, I don't know. I enjoy that as well. But there, yeah, that's an interesting point you made.
I will say, oh no, you go.
Well, I was going to say, and Richard Kelly very explicitly tried to make like a very postmodern over the top movie. Like, that was the point also in the casting. Like, you read that cast list, which is crazy. Wild. And he intentionally picked these people who were crazy famous, but very pigeonholed into certain things.
Yeah, I did see that.
And so the idea that I want to take these people and put them into a movie and just see what they're capable of doing. But I think part of it being a movie about celebrity and all that, he picked these celebrities that aren't necessarily all synonymous with, well, that's just what an incredible, I mean, except for, of course, Sarah Michelle Gellar, who is the shining star of this movie and is great in everything.
I love that
she does. She is.
I love watching her.
She's incredible. She's so good in this movie. But yeah. Oh.
I found myself really, really enjoying watching The Rock in this movie. Because I've never, ever seen anything with him that is anything like this.
Yeah.
He also, even visually, just looks more like a real human. Like, because
he's pretty lean back then, too.
Like, he is so, like, just juiced. Gigantic human at this point when you see him in anything where you're like, that doesn't look like a real person. Whereas like when you're looking at him in this, you're like, you are buff for sure, but it's different. Like, I thought that was really interesting.
I gotta say, anytime I see him in an older movie, I think you look better bald. You're one of those few people where I'm like, the hair does not do it for me.
No. Yeah. Well, has he ever had like a full head of hair since he's been like famous? I don't know that he has.
What do you mean?
Like, are you just saying, like, if you're picturing him with hair?
I mean, he has hair in this movie.
He does?
Hair. Yeah. He's not bald.
No, he's not bald.
I mean, it's not like he has, like,
flowing
hair,
up.
But he
no,
has
hair.
He has a lion's
movie.
Mane.
No, but he totally he has hair. He totally has hair in this movie.
Yeah.
He's great in this movie.
What? He is.
And he.
Oh, my gosh. He has a ton of hair in this movie. How am I just picturing him bald?
Because
you think of him as bald, yeah. But yeah, he has hair.
Huh. Okay. Well.
Also in The Game Plan, that's another movie that he has hair.
Oh, yeah. The Game Plan. Justin, we watch that a lot. Walking Tall. I watch that on cable with my
parents. I think
parents.
A great podcast would be just covering movies where Dwayne Johnson has hair.
Our hairy rock month.
This is the first movie that he dropped the Rock moniker for.
I saw that.
He took this movie extremely seriously and in the years since has said, like, it broke his heart what a disaster this movie turned out to be.
That's actually sad.
In terms of, like, its critical and commercial reception. Because he is really good in it. I think he's kind of perfect for the part that he's playing. And you need someone who embodies sort of the consummate movie star.
Yeah. Just a few things that popped into my mind when I was thinking very literally about what is true to me about this. I was thinking about our president putting the Marines in L.A. over protests.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, spatially, but also just like, oh, authoritarian government. I was thinking of the Snowden leak in 2013 with USAIDENT and all of the spying on civilians. I vibe a lot with just the political satire here. One other thing that I was like, huh, that's interesting. Is a porn star's relationship to the Republican Party.
Yeah.
That, I think, in two ways. One, there's an obvious one of, like, the Stormy Daniels Trump thing. Okay, that's very on its face. But just two, I think for a long time, the Republican Party was seen as conservative and also just like a very particular picture of family values.
Sure.
And I mean, post-Trump, I don't think that can even be said of just like, because he's one of the most profane people I've ever seen. And so, I mean, just like that kind of like relationship, I think is interesting.
Absolutely. And to clarify, and this doesn't spoil the movie, Dwayne Johnson's character, Boxer, is married to the daughter of a Republican presidential candidate.
Yeah.
And is cheating on the daughter with a porn star.
Because he goes
but
through
he
the
doesn't
time.
Know that he is.
He goes
correct.
Through the time for film
part of
or
the
whatever it's called.
Okay, well, are we spoiling
also,
the movie?
Spoilers.
Yeah, we're spoiling.
If people are listening to this, they should have watched the movie.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
We
don't
assume.
I just want to make sure. I've been kind of holding back on certain things.
Let
because,
loose.
Okay.
Yeah, let her rip. But yeah, he goes through the time film, and that's why he's like, he's confused / he is the future version of him.
Correct.
So he doesn't even know that he's married. That's why.
Correct. Because the other version of him was killed.
Killed.
In a, yeah, an SUV explosion.
I think a tank sponsored by Hustler is hilarious. It's one of the funniest things I've seen in a movie in a while. I think the amount that this movie references things gave me a kind of Tarantino vibe. In
interesting.
Because Tarantino is someone who, even if I don't know everything that is being referenced, you can tell that certain things are referenced because they are so random that you're like, this meant something to the director, so he wanted to put this in here. And I got that vibe throughout. And some of them I caught. And then some of them I'm like, this is just interesting and odd. And it reminded me of a Tarantino kind of thing in that sense.
Yeah. I mean, you can see it in some character names for sure. I mean, if you just want 10 very fun minutes of your life, just go read all the character names on IMDb because this movie is stacked with the craziest character names of all time, and they're all fantastic.
Yeah, a lot of crazy names.
Anything that to you, you're like, I do not vibe with this. Not true. Or you're just like, this strikes me as something I do not like, or like, this is not true about the world.
It's so lame because I'm just the wrong person to ask about this movie specifically
sure.
because I truly can't think of a movie that I have more fun watching than when I watch this movie. And so I'm sure there's a lot of issues with it that I'm blind to just because I just kind of hang on every moment of it.
Sure.
I think car sex is not true for me. I don't want to see car sex happening.
I mean, yeah.
Cars don't have sex.
Yeah, that's so.
There's
not
a, yes, there's but, a once again though, as a bit of like satirical.
It's the European ad. So we wouldn't even see it in the US, Justin. Get over it.
I don't have
there's,
to worry about it.
Yes, there's a car commercial in the movie in which one of the cars has a metal dick.
Yes.
And proceeds in Bobby Frost's words, pork the other.
Yeah, am I watching two cars porking right now? What did you say for this, Nick? I want to know what you said.
This is a personal problem, okay? So this is a viewer problem, I'll acknowledge, in the sense of like, for me, when I'm watching a movie, I want a person that I can at least somewhat root for. I can't root for anyone here, like at all. I don't think.
Not even Boxer?
Oh, interesting.
Like, no, I don't. The only kind of exception would maybe be at the very end with the ice cream truck and the friendly fire and all of that. I'm like, I feel a little bit of empathy towards Stifler's character, characters. But I also, I don't know, overall, I'm just like, I don't care about anyone in this movie and what happens to them. But
I will say, I don't know if this falls under this category, I really didn't vibe with the whole Justin Timberlake narrating.
The voiceover?
Just did not like that. And yeah, I don't know why. I don't know if that's what is not true, but I think it would benefit. I don't know what to say about that, but that's something I noted in my brain as I was watching.
It feels intentionally inaccessible to me too, which bugged me, but then I can't even say that as much of a critique because I was addicted to reading about it afterwards.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I get annoyed when I'm like, this is intentionally not accessible. But then afterwards I'm like, well, I have spent hours reading about it, so maybe that's not all bad. I don't know.
For sure. Well, I mean, I think that's just there's an interesting conversation to be had about what do filmmakers and artists actually owe their audiences. And I think film is an interesting medium in terms of if we don't understand it right away, we kind of get mad at it. And it's like confusing is a bad thing.
Yeah.
But if you would look at, like, let's say painting, and you don't understand a painting, you wouldn't be like, well, this is a bad painting because I don't get it.
Mm-hmm. Can I play devil's advocate and say a painting doesn't take 2.5 hours to look at? And I think that
that you think
might
that they owe you more because of the amount of time that you're investing in it? Because, I mean, people wait 2.5 hours to look at the Mona Lisa.
Yeah. I don't know. I wouldn't wait 2.5 hours to look at the Mona Lisa, but that might be a personal thing as well.
I don't know.
I think it's an interesting question because I also think that a lot of times it's like people's, mine included, sometimes favorite movies are ones that might not be at the most accessible. And because it feels very personal and it feels very like, yeah, I don't know. in on the, not in on the joke because it's not a joke, but just like in on what this thing is trying to be. I don't know.
I would say though too with the painting thing that people who are not into film and just go watch a movie are like people who understand paintings might see a painting and they don't understand it and they might have a better idea of this is not, this doesn't have direction or what is this painting versus film people can do that. And then also anyone else can do that because they can sense that easier maybe, if that makes sense. Like I wouldn't say I'm film literate in as much as many other people, but I watch this and I'm like, what is going on here?
Yeah. For sure.
And that's going to be a lot of people watching this movie for the first time, especially.
Yeah.
Versus someone might interpret a painting differently. I don't know if any of that makes sense.
Sure. But I just think my question is that a fair measure of a movie? Is sure. like how sensical it is?
Yeah.
Especially in a movie like this where part of the intent is that it is incredibly convoluted and you yeah. do have to go outside of the movie to mm-hmm. fully understand it, which, interestingly enough, you also have to do with Donnie Darko.
Mm-hmm.
Famously, there are concepts, he like relics and stuff. There are concepts he made up for that movie that the movie does not explain.
Yep.
And so, but people love that movie. And yeah. so it is interesting when you're willing to like suspend your disbelief or when you're willing to give a movie like credit and when you're not.
Yeah,
for sure.
The reaction to this movie to be upset or mad, I don't get, because when it ended, I was so surprised how it ended, and I was like, oh, that's the ending. Okay, well,
yeah,
I don't know what I was expecting with the ending, but like, sure, why not? Let's just end there.
For sure.
Why not? Do you think if this came out today, people would have a heyday with this movie, especially given the current state of this year?
I think if this movie came out today, if it had an A24 logo on it, a lot more people would be a lot more open to it. That's my opinion. That might not be true, but I think there's a particular crowd that it could market to in a way that might be to its advantage.
I think we know for a fact that the movie would be better received just because it is receiving critical reappraisal as time goes on. And yeah. It, which is not to say that people are like, this is the greatest movie of all time. I mean, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but that's what you're saying for sure.
Yeah, I'm leading that charge. But in general, people do, with the added context of the last 20 years, I think more people are looking at it and saying it was ahead of its time, which is absolutely true.
Yeah, I would say so. I watched this and I was like feeling, are we heading towards this right now? Like, not in an actual way, but like, is this where we're headed?
I mean, I think the fact that Donald Trump has had the success that he has had, not to bring it all back to him, I think there's a lot more yeah. rich commentary than just, yes. oh, Trump. But I mean, I think he's definitely an interesting picture of...
Justin, don't let him rip on your boy like that, man.
Oh, my
yeah,
gosh.
Justin's sitting in here wearing his MAGA hat right
yeah,
now. So.
Just frowning up here. Like, I can't believe you'd say that. He should be in this movie.
Austin, what does this movie have? And I might be redundant in this, but I just want to like plumb the depths of your soul in
Please.
Connection to this movie. What does this movie have that really stirs you emotionally? And I know I kind of already asked that. What does it have that stirs you emotionally? And what does it have that other movies don't have that makes it like your, is this your all-time favorite?
This is my all-time favorite.
Okay,
movie.
So what, and it might be an intangible, but like what is it about this movie that you're just like, yeah, this is just hitting me in this particular way?
Yeah, so not to get too spiritual with it,
feel free to get spiritual.
But mm-hmm. as a spiritual person myself, as someone who sees the sort of point of existence and the arc of history to be about the concept of like reconciliation and forgiveness, I do think that's ultimately what this movie is about. Like that, the very moment of forgiveness and reconciliation is quite literally where the movie ends.
Yeah.
And I think that's just such a beautiful – and then like – if you then what happens, we don't literally see it, but then the world completely ends.
Yeah.
And that literally is like sort of the like repair into destruction. And I just think that that's very beautiful. And I think sort of mimics the whole point of existence to a certain extent. And so that, I think, has always really spoken to me, is that I think it's a movie that just really nails that final moment of...
Do you view the two Stiflers shaking hands and that reconciliation as like a beautiful way for it to be like, okay, and now the book is closed? Like the story of humanity is over with this, with a reconciliation of a guy who has obviously gone through a ton of trauma and even hates himself in certain ways.
Of course.
Coming to a point where he can forgive himself, but and even give him, forgive himself in a vehicle of forgiving someone else because he's two different people too. Like,
of course. Well, really, I think it's twofold, because I do think there is this, the reconciliation with yourself, which is something we all need to experience. And then there's the reconciliation with others.
Yeah.
And in that final moment, it's not just about Roland slash Ronald, like, reconciling with himself and forgiving himself. It's also about Pilot, Justin Timberlake's character, forgiving him for what happened to them.
Yeah.
Another thing about the movie, Justin Timberlake's in this movie and he's disfigured because of a friendly fire incident that happened with Sean William Scott's character, Roland. And so in that last moment, it's not just Roland forgiving himself. It's also Pilot forgiving Roland for what happened. So
he's like, he was the best friend I ever had, right?
For sure. So it's, it's inner reconciliation and outer reconciliation all at once. And that's very beautiful. Like, that final scene has absolutely made me cry before. I think it's gorgeous. And I think the imagery of it is, it's so cool looking. And it's really just like my favorite final shot in a movie ever. Mm-hmm. But I think that's what really speaks to my soul about this movie. I think it is incredibly fun to watch, but there is something so true and human and spiritual about it, is also what keeps me coming back.
This is what I love about talking to people in longer conversations about movies, because hearing you talk about it makes me enjoy that scene so much more than I was enjoying it the first time I was watching.
That's cool.
And I think that that's really cool.
Didn't you say you weren't sure about the ending, but it did hit you a little emotionally when you watched it, Nick?
Yeah, for sure. The ending, that part definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be the best hang in this movie? Who is your best hang, Austin?
Yeah. Oh, Pilot's my best hang for sure.
Why is that?
I mean, forgiving friend. He likes to have a good time. Listen to the Killers.
Uh-huh.
Which, how haven't we talked about that scene? Which... if in a moment of studio interference defiance, they wanted him to cut the whole "all these things that I've done" sequence.
Yeah.
And Richard Kelly was like, that is the heart and soul of the movie. I will not take it out of the movie.
Is that like the scene with Justin Timberlake with blood singing, on his face
and singing? Pouring Budweiser on his head.
With all the girls dancing around him.
Yeah.
It's great. That is one of those scenes that you kind of have to let it wash over you to appreciate what's happening at all.
When that scene started, I was like, what is happening?
It's also important to note that he's like tripping on fluid karma at the time.
He just took that fluid karma.
Yeah.
It's hitting.
Oh, there's also so many theories about this movie that we can get into.
Oh, I am sure. But,
about like how fluid karma connects people who have taken it, or and so you could actually, like, that final moment of Roland and Ronald might be like Pilot in and Roland in a very literal sense.
Yeah.
But there's a lot to be read about this movie, and I would encourage you, after you watch it, you will appreciate it more if you read what people have said about it.
I said Private Pilot Abe Lane as well.
Yeah.
And for similar reasons, although I was also like, he just throw back a couple of buds.
He just seems like a cool guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I said Boxer. I liked his vibe of walking around with a Bud Light six pack, just pouring that on him.
But no, seriously, when he just has the six pack and like one of them's open and he's just pouring it on his head.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know. I enjoyed watching
him. I mean, my backup would
be
Krista, but I love Sarah Michelle Gellar, and so I can't pick
like
Krista
separate?
Just because I want to hang out with Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, you can. You can pick whatever you want. Who's the worst hang?
Oh, John Lovitz's character is the worst hang by
the main bad guy?
No, the cop.
No, the cop.
The cop who shoots the people for real. Yeah,
true. Yeah, Bart Bookman. Yeah, I mean, maybe
great
just
name.
Great name. Maybe just an all-time bad hang. In a movie full of, I will agree, like you were saying, in a movie full of bad hangs,
he's
a truly unpleasant person in every
I thought you were talking
regard.
About the guy who chopped off that guy's hand.
Oh, no, the
Not
Baron?
The guy who actually did it, but yeah, the Baron.
I said the Baron is an honorable mention, but I said Senator Bobby Frost.
Yeah,
he sucks.
No,
I would hate hanging out with him.
Yeah, you do not want to get in a conversation with Senator Bobby Frost. He was he was my backup, would have been him.
Yeah. I said the Baron, though, too, because, like, I don't want to get my hand chopped off. And,
yeah,
like,
exactly.
he's his level of unhinged and not understanding humans at all is interesting.
It's really funny you say that. Only because there's a funny review of this movie.
Yeah.
When it screened at Cannes.
Okay.
Where somebody was like, this is a movie that was written by a person who's never met another person.
Yes. I've seen people say that about Nicholas Winding Refn as well. This person has never met
this
another
movie
person.
Is so much better than any movie that Nicholas.
Disagree.
Is it Winding?
Nicholas Winding Refn, I'm a huge Drive fan. I love Drive.
Oh, yeah.
Drive is one of my favorite movies in the world.
Overrated. You can come on my podcast that I don't have, and you can convince me that Drive doesn't suck.
I freaking love Drive. But wait, this is not a Drive podcast. Justin, who's your worst hang?
I said the Baron.
Oh, yes. Okay, cool.
Because he chops off a hand for a 6-inch stipulation.
True. You got to read that contract. Any movie-specific questions that you have? This might be a good time for fan theories as well.
Absolutely.
Movie, yeah. What is a movie specific question?
So they're usually pretty dumb. I.e.,
should
the
we
one...
vote on July 3rd? That's what I thought. That seems really patriotic.
Yeah.
Then on July 4th, we determine who's president. Makes sense to me.
Sure. Yes.
I think we should.
I think it would make July 4th more depressing. A lot of the time.
Yeah. I'm already not, like, loving it on July 4th.
No.
So let's just stack as many bad things on each other as we can.
But I at least like watching fireworks if they're good. If there's a lot of fireworks, and that would really harsh the vibe, I think.
Maybe that'd pick you up at the end of the day if you're sad.
You
got fireworks to look forward
to
in Whitestown, Indiana.
Yeah, the Whitestown fireworks, for whatever reason, are just absolutely killer. I don't know why. Is Boxer Santoris the coolest name of a character ever? Like, that's an example of a question.
Sure. It's a great question. I mean, it's close. If anything were to beat it, it would be Jericho Kane. The other
Jericho
name
Kane.
Of
Jericho Kane. That's the fake name they give him, right?
That's his name in the screenplay.
Oh, yeah. So that, too. Is that, like, inception of, like, the movie almost being like, trying to profess what is going to happen in the future, and then there's that screenplay that he is talking about. I know what's going to happen in the future, and this is my screenplay about it.
Yeah, I mean, I do think there is kind of a fortuitous thing that happened where it is a movie about this kind of prophetic screenplay, and the movie itself ended up being that. I mean, Richard Kelly can't have known that that was the case, obviously.
Okay.
But if you are confused as to what this movie's about, the movie does kind of explain itself when he talks about what the screenplay is, because the screenplay directly mirrors what is happening in reality.
Yeah.
What's your favorite fan theory?
Oh, man.
or a few.
Yeah. No, I mean, I did shout out the one I really like, which is how fluid karma connects people who have seen it.
Okay. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Fluid karma comes from, like, an underground river that is serpentine throughout the globe.
Yes, from, like, the ocean. And, yeah, it's a perpetual motion,
perpetual
power source that kind of mimics the ocean.
Yes.
Is
I thought it was the ocean.
No, but
talking about it now.
Yes, no, it is like a – it is something they found that mimics the power of the ocean.
And it's just under the earth flowing like a serpent throughout the globe.
And you can take it as a drug as well.
Okay, actually, you know so much about this movie. I'm going to ask you some questions to see if I understand them and tell me if I'm right or wrong.
Go for it.
Okay, Jericho Kane is the name of a character in an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Correct. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So, yes. He just took that from. It's a 90s movie, I think.
Yeah.
I don't remember what movie it is, but yes, that is directly pulled from an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
There are two taverners because one went 69 minutes back in time, and that created two. So they do the different take of time travel, whereas in, like, when we talked about time, he is, when he goes back in time, there's no other him walking around. But in this universe, when they go back in time, it creates another one because the other one is just hanging out in that time.
Correct. And there were also two Boxer Santeros, one of whom was killed. So that's why we never see the second Boxer.
And how was he killed again?
He was killed in there's that SUV explosion in the desert. It is not explicitly said how or why that happened, but we do know that the second Boxer was killed in the desert. We kind of see the car speeding across it.
Okay. And then also, Krista Now wrote all of the Power script, correct?
Krista Now and Boxer wrote the script together.
They wrote it together?
Yes.
Okay, I thought she just wrote it. Okay. And have you...
The power.
Have you read all three graphic novels?
I have.
Okay, where
years.
Have you read them? Like, have you... Did you... Because they're like $150 right now when I was looking at them online.
So Max, my best friend who showed me this movie, has them.
Okay.
So he lent them to me. So he did I think bought them maybe before there was demand. Or maybe he dropped $150 on it. That would surprise me.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. And then Richard Kelly, doesn't he want to make another thing that is like, I read this somewhere.
Yeah.
It was like he wants to make like an animation live action hybrid prequel or sequel or something.
So he has several things that he wants to do. I actually don't know whether it's animated, but I know he has both sequel and prequel ideas that he would like to do for this movie.
Yeah.
If the opportunity ever presented itself. He talks about it in a way that's incredibly hopeful. It's very hard for me to imagine we're ever going to get more like another film or like a miniseries in this world. That seems impossible to me.
Yeah.
But I also don't know what the next 10 years are going to bring in terms of like reappraisal of this movie. Anything could happen. But the idea that it's like imminent, as he sometimes made it sound, seems impossible.
That would be so awesome if in 5 years – it got so much hype that he made it and it like revived his career because people came around to this whole story.
Have you read the article, the Vice article from 2013? That's like a long, long interview with Richard Kelly.
I'm sure I have.
Okay. Because I read that recently because I was like just reading about the movie and it was really interesting because what you're saying about him being very hopeful, that really came across in like the article. And like, because the guy who was like the journalist tweeted at Richard Kelly and was like, it's my dream to interview this man about Southland Tales.
Yeah.
And then Richard Kelly like tweeted at him and was like, hey, let's do it. And so they talked a lot. And like, it was funny because the guy asked a lot of questions and Richard Kelly answered all of them like, here's the exact answer.
Yep.
Which, okay, here's a question about filmmaking that I have for you, which is like, so on one end of the spectrum, you have like a David Lynch who's like, I made The Thing. I'm not talking about The Thing. You can ask me all the questions about it. And frankly, this is my opinion. I think a lot of times there is no real answer. It's very subjective and he wants you to roll with it and be with the vibe. Whereas Richard Kelly in this is like the opposite end of that spectrum where he's also making a thing that's very esoteric and interesting and strange. But he's like, oh, but here's the exact answer to your question. Like every part of his universe is very like, there's a reason and he'll tell you it, which I thought was really interesting.
For sure.
Yeah.
What's the question?
There is no question. I just thought, oh, well, what do you think about that? I did actually have a question. What is your take on that? Do you think that filmmakers should answer every question or do you think that they should leave it to just people making what they make of it?
I'm good with either. I think that I kind of said it earlier. I don't necessarily believe that filmmakers owe anything to their audience beyond what they've decided to put on screen and I think that's true of art in any medium. I think I'll leave it there. Neither of those two bother me. I mean, with it never bothered me with Lynch. May he rest in peace. And yeah. It certainly, as a fan of Southland Tales, I like that Richard's so willing to talk about it.
For sure. Any fun facts that you have in your brain that you can dispense?
I know. We've talked about most of the ones that we'd cover. I mean, obviously this being him getting booed out of the festival is kind of a famous story.
Yeah.
In 2011, Justin Timberlake said that Southland Tales is performance art. I still don't know what that movie's about.
Yeah. I think a lot of people feel that way. Well, and Timberlake is, I think, an interesting case, too, because here's a fun fact. He was on set for one day.
Mm-hmm.
He was on set for one day?
They shot every – now, his voiceover was recorded separately.
Right.
But in terms of him actually being on set, so the dance sequence, him in, like, the gun turret or whatever, like, all that stuff was shot in a day.
And apparently, like, the gun turret – thing, it wasn't a giant production, so not everyone around the area knew what was happening, so they're just seeing this giant gun turret just like on the boardwalk and they're like, what is going on?
That would be crazy. Terrifying to me. Do you know at all if he is the type of director that is either one, I need to shoot this 100 times to make sure I have it exactly how I want it, or let's just shoot it 3 times and I'm sure we'll have a good take in there?
Yeah, I actually don't. I actually don't know that specifically.
I could see either way, honestly.
Yeah, once again, I think that this is such a director's movie in terms of he was very – it feels very deliberate, and it feels like he was trying to get specific performances. So I would lean toward this movie did a lot of takes. There's
Me
also
too.
Another fact that I do know also about Timberlake, which is that he – brought Timberlake back in and had him re-record all the dialogue or all the voiceover because he listened back and was like, he was too sarcastic the first time. And it was like
tongue in cheek.
Yeah. Okay. And Kelly specifically said, like, I directed him wrong. So like took the blame for that, but he did bring him back in. So, I mean, he was definitely very cautious. And so it can't – if it's – it would be a third thing because it's not – we probably got it. Like, I think he was very
– Yeah.
Yeah.
I could see
exacted
that.
A lot of control over, like, what the movie looks like and sounds like and feels like.
The thing that I find crazy is that when they had Timberlake for a day of shooting, they didn't have the rights to the song that they used. And the Killers were cool enough to be like, yeah, use the song. But just like if you're putting so much on that because that's kind of like a fulcrum for the movie that it spins
for
around.
Sure. Yeah.
And like if they can't use that song, I wonder what that would be. If
yeah,
it would
what they
be.
Would have done.
Yeah, because he spends all of his time almost that he has Timberlake that he's like, all right, let's do this thing. Not all of it.
For sure.
They a significant amount.
He's in like an arcade or something maybe.
Yeah.
It looks like an arcade. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
The dancers look like they're on a ski ball machines.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, exactly.
What do you – well, I have two questions actually. First off, who was the person when you saw in this movie that you were the most like, what? Because for me, I was just – I thought it was hilarious to me that Amy Poehler was in this movie.
I mean, I think that's the right answer.
Okay.
Just because it feels like someone who's so out of left field and not – especially in 2006 or when they shot it, 2004, 2005, whenever that was, that feels so disconnected. That feels so disconnected from that world. Yeah, I mean, I think she's a very odd one to have pop up.
Yeah.
I also, this is looking back on things, and she's made movies after that. A lot of the movies are more common comedies where she's the star.
How can I say this nicely?
No, I actually just turned my finger on it. I was like, how do I describe this? Like Sisters, like movies like that.
Mm-hmm.
So like a movie with her in it like this, I'm like, what? So anyways, so that, and then what do you make, and I might have just not caught what's going on. What do we make of her and the guy that she was with that she pretended to be married to and going to that house to set up something?
Mm-hmm.
What why were they doing that? What was going on there? I kind of forget their role even in this movie. Amy Poehler and that, like Dion Element, I think was his name in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Which is a great name as well. There's lots. Every character's name in this movie is amazing. Sorry.
No, you got it.
Also, yeah. How have we not mentioned that 69 shows up a lot of times in this movie?
Proposition 69, 69 minutes back.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's hard not to think it's just for that joke where he's like, to Krista, 69 meant one thing and one thing only. To everyone else, it meant Prop 69.
Yeah.
My understanding is that they're doing, like with the blood squibs, right? Mm-hmm. Aren't they trying to get on video?
A cop, or like police brutality.
Yes. Yeah. Because they're the neo-Marxist group, and they want to, like, use that in the election as, like, political sway.
Oh, right, because they're trying to sway an election, and they're, yeah. like, gathering fingers, right, to help sway it, too?
The fingers. I don't know what. I don't know.
Because I'm assuming in this near future, you have to use fingerprint ID to vote, and my thing is they're going to go through different lines and just use that finger somewhere else.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
That's what I was thinking when I watched that.
Yeah. It's so funny. You were talking about feeling dirty. Like, that's that whole sequence is when I feel it's like so the gross. They're so gross, both of those characters. That's super interesting. Yeah.
That's what I was.
You're probably right. Yeah.
That's what I interpreted it as. But I, yeah. That. Also, the squibs. We're so late.
That's going
just
off.
That's just a good like comedy bit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. It is so late. It's hilarious.
In the original version, isn't Janine Garofalo in it?
Or is it the other way around?
Well, she wasn't in the version that I watched.
Oh yeah, I guess when you said original, I
like
was
the,
picturing
the
theatrical. Yes,
yeah, yeah,
in
yeah.
the can. Yes, she
yeah,
is.
Yeah.
yeah. So it's about 15 minutes longer. And yes, there was stuff that he cut out to streamline things a little bit.
Okay.
And so, yes, her
and
character
what does
she
do?
I want to say she's like a general or something.
That would be amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
I wish that was in what I watched.
Just forgot about this. It probably belongs under what is true.
Oh, yeah. Whatever.
But
free flowing.
Oh, yeah. Or we can go. We can do whatever. I thought this was interesting and also really resonated with me as I was reading about it. And it's an interview – or sorry, not an interview. It's a just a review of the movie. And Philippa Snow, they reviewed it in 2021 and partially because of lockdown, they wanted to watch this movie. And to your point about this movie getting some more hype recently – they said, I also watched it because at present there is something satisfying about an apocalypse story that suggests humanity may be too dumb, too self-interested, and too naturally violent to survive. And I am a worrier, so sometimes I worry about our planet, specifically like climate change and some of those things, and also where we're headed as humanity. And I see both sides of it, or I'm like, we're not going to let ourselves get too far gone. And then some days I'm like, we are so stupid. We're not going to care about what is most important and just freaking care about other stuff and literally destroy everything. And that's yeah. how it's going to go. And I was like, that hits true. And I watched this movie. I like now that I'm thinking about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, there is a really interesting aspect, which is that the characters at the core of the movie, which does really set this apart from other apocalyptic movies, like they are so self-interested that they basically every action they take to avoid the end of the world basically leads us directly into it. You know, like they're all sort of like unwilling participants in the apocalypse just based on the actions that they take, like unknowingly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that person is absolutely right in how they describe that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. It's really interesting to watch an apocalyptic movie that just ends in the end of the world and there's no avoiding it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember. There's a very the screenplay for the movie is even more explicit in the fact that like the world does end right after that final moment.
I think I find it pretty implied and believable that the world is ending at the very end of this movie. I was like, yeah, it's over. It's done. Something that was surreal in watching this movie. Actually, there's a lot that's surreal in this movie, but I'm currently reading the book and I read very slow. So I've been reading it for a while. Flow My Tears, The Policeman Said, which is a Philip K. Dick book.
Oh, yeah.
And in this movie, after John Lovitz's character shoots those two people, he's like, flow my tears. And I was like, oh, whoa. And then the Taverner, the main character in the book's last name is Taverner. And so it was odd being in the middle of this book and then watching this movie and being like, oh, wow. That's like just a really interesting thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think Kelly specifically described the movie as like the sensibilities of Philip K. Dick mixed with the sensibilities of Andy Warhol.
That's really interesting.
And so, yes, Philip K. Dick was a huge influence.
Where do you see Warhol in this? Or do you see Warhol in this?
Yeah, that's a really good question.
And I'm not super familiar with Warhol, so I'm asking because I'm like, I can't
point
out anything.
Well, I mean, what I associate him with things that are pretty over the top and in your face.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Kind of like Gonzo. And so I do think that's where I see it, but I'd be interested in whether Kelly was pulling from anything more specific in his inspiration there.
Yeah. What would you pair this movie with? Anything within the human experience?
Probably death is what I would pair
God,
it with.
Oh my goodness.
I think if like this movie and then it ends and that just rolls right into my death, I think I'd be okay with that. One, like the last movie I ever watched is Southland Tales, which that's pretty badass. And second, like because it is a movie about the end of all things, that I think that's thematically resonant. So I go with death.
You're going to be on your deathbed and say, Sam, pull up Southland Tales.
Please, my love.
My last request.
And honestly, it's probably the only way I could get her to watch it. Is if we're like,
has
if
she
it's
seen
my
it?
Dying wish, no.
You're going to be 85 and you're going to be like,
we have a few movies
Southland
like that.
Tales.
Where,
yeah. You're going to be timing it out. You're like, okay.
I think I got about 158 minutes left.
Press play. Really quickly. No bathroom breaks. What about you, Justin?
Wait, you were going to say something about movies that you guys are trying to get each other to watch or something? You and Sam.
There's just a few movies that I, for some reason, can't get her to watch. And so it's just sort of my life goal to, But this being one that I most understand her unwillingness to watch. Like, I do think she would find this movie confounding to the point of rage. I think she'd be really mad at this movie. We just like different things. And not all different things, obviously, but there are definitely types of movies that I like that Sam has no interest in.
For sure.
I think you should pair this movie with a deep dive, even reading a dissertation on Revelation and see what's going
yeah.
on there.
On the Book of Revelation.
I could probably just talk to my brother about that because he has a PhD in the New Testament.
Justin,
so.
You need to get Jordan Chapman to watch Southland Tales because I would be fascinated.
Yeah, we haven't talked about the biblical references.
We haven't talked about any.
One of the last lines of the movie is him reading
a
verse from Revelation 21, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jordan has a PhD in...
We also haven't talked about the literal last line of the movie.
I don't remember.
Which is what?
Which is, he's a pimp, and pimps don't commit suicide.
They do not commit suicide.
This, and I will say this has always been a really hilarious structuring of this movie. Like, the emotional climax, which really is the final moment of the film, includes the line, he's a pimp, pimps don't commit suicide.
What do you make of that line?
Which was said previously. That line is introduced, like, 70% into the movie, and then they end the movie on it.
Which is an interesting choice.
It is. Yeah, I find that to be one of the more impenetrable lines in the movie.
Okay, yeah, because I did not know what that meant either.
Yeah, no, I'd have to like think it through.
Nick, I can't stop thinking about having Jordan watch this movie now because he's going to know the Bible so well that every verse that's going to be read, he's going to know the exact context for it probably. And he's going to be like, they're pairing it with that in the movie. That's really interesting. I would love to get his thoughts on this movie.
I just want him to watch it because really fascinated to hear Jordan's take.
Yeah,
I would love to hear that. Jordan, if you're listening to this, go watch Southland Tales
right now.
I'm sure.
Everyone who's listening to this, go watch Southland Tales.
Yeah, what are you doing? Go watch the movie.
But I mean, I do think in a movie that is about, like, the end of the world, I think there's something about meeting that head on that like those characters see as very noble.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like you don't get to subtract yourself from the equation before like the sum is there.
Hmm.
And so,
do you find that to be a life affirming thing?
For sure. Yeah. For sure. And it's, I don't want to be pithy in how we talk about like the subject of suicide.
Yeah, for sure.
But I do think that there is like, and this is the truth. Or not the truth. This is the point of a lot of movies, which is like the world is worth living in, even to like the final moment.
Yeah.
And then I think it's couched into this very, I mean, the characters in this movie have a very interesting way of talking. And I feel like Richard Kelly is kind of pulling from different cultures. And it's this very broad LA type speak. That for sort sure. of does feel like how they might talk in the future in a city like that. And so I think he's, yeah.
I think movies that do stuff with language in the future, I think are interesting. Because I think of like A Clockwork Orange.
Yeah.
There's some really weird language stuff in that. Or I think of like Mad Max, where language has just sort of like degenerated.
Yeah.
And so I'm always interested when I watch movies that take place in the future where you're like, huh, what has happened to language? And like, what does that say about?
Yeah.
Where the future is gone. I said to pair this movie with Bullworth. Have you seen the movie Bullworth?
No, I haven't.
And the reason I said that is because both movies, I think, get at certain political realities in our voices that I'm like, whoa, like you don't hear this much in major movies. I mean, I would say Bullworth with like neoliberalism in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And this movie with like surveillance state and forever wars and things like that. Things that I don't think are present in a lot of movies. Mm. Yeah. Bullworth is a crazy, crazy movie. Weird movie.
Yeah.
One of the best hip hop soundtracks I've heard in a movie. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Cool. Anything else for the good of the cause?
I just have to mention getting tasered in the balls. That was awesome. That's a dope part of the movie.
So dope.
Elephant sex as well. You see that in the movie.
What?
Oh, the very beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that with the Republican National Convention.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Also, I'm trying to remember if this is correct. Does, The Rock pick up an orange on his way to the convention thing or whatever?
Yeah.
Isn't an orange like when death is going to happen in a movie?
Oh, interesting. I don't know. Is that like a...
Is that a thing? Can you think of any other movies where that happens?
No. I've just heard that talked about before. And so that's the only time I've noticed that in a movie where an orange appears just like out of nowhere. And I was like, is something deadly about to happen? I don't know.
Not the color orange. You're talking about an orange.
A literal orange.
Yeah.
I don't know. Huh. I don't know. One other thing that I just thought was interesting is Wallace Shawn, Inconceivable Princess Bride.
Yes.
He, the Baron, he, in looking at this movie, when the script came to him, he said, I wanted to do this because I didn't want to say I didn't want to do it just because I didn't understand it.
Yeah.
And he mentioned some other actor I can't remember.
Which Will Smith did that for Inception. He didn't take it because he didn't understand it.
That's interesting. And I just think that's really interesting as an actor to be like, because you're taking a big gamble. If you don't get what the thing is about,
right.
Like that's a risk to take. But I think it's a really interesting one to be like, I don't want to miss something that could be great.
For sure. I do think that like everyone was riding so high on Donnie Darko. I think people were probably like, this guy's smarter than me. And maybe they didn't get Donnie Darko, but they're like, everybody loved it. So I do think that there were people making this movie who were like, I think I'm in something that everyone's going to love. It's like, when it came out, I think there were people in the movie that were like, what?
And everybody loved it, and it made $1 trillion.
It's not good. Like, yeah. I think that's how Dwayne Johnson felt.
Yeah.
Was I think the whole time, I think everybody trusted Richard Kelly so much. And once again, they should. This movie's awesome, but I do think they were surprised by the reception of it.
Is Donnie Darko in your top 10 or something?
No,
movies?
No. Oddly enough,
what are your thoughts on it?
I like Donnie Darko a lot.
Okay.
Yeah, such a good movie. But no, it does not speak to me the way that this movie does.
Sure.
Donnie Darko to me is just like, yeah, that's a really good movie. Mm-hmm. Donnie Darko is a bit of like a college dorm room poster movie to me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know what I mean? It's like, so that's how I feel about Fight. I mean, Fincher's your favorite director. That's how I feel about Fight
Justin,
Club.
Me, yeah.
Fight Club to me is like a college. Like when you're in college, you're like, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. And then like you go on, you're like, ah, all right.
That's how I feel about Donnie Darko. Fight Club is my favorite Fincher movie.
That is crazy.
It is my favorite Fincher movie.
Crazy to me.
I haven't seen Mank. I haven't seen Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, and I haven't seen Benjamin Button.
Well, the best David Fincher movie, and it's not even close. And he's a good director, so it's not like I'm saying it's his only good movie. But Zodiac is the best David Fincher movie for me by a long shot.
I'd say a lot of people agree with you. I think it's between that and The Social Network that like people love the most.
I love Social Network. And you guys talked about The Game. I love The Game. Mm-hmm. There's not a David Fincher movie that I dislike.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't love Mank, but...
I haven't watched it yet.
I mean, it's just...
Me neither. It looks like a slog.
I'm probably going to watch it for the sake of watching it.
No, you
Fincher.
Should. As
well,
a
Justin, Finchie's your boy.
I know, I have to.
And now he's directing a spinoff of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood?
What?
Yeah, he is.
He's directing the Cliff Booth spinoff of that movie? Mm-hmm. It's kind of a weird one.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, Donnie Darko, I like it, but I... Yeah, this movie. And I also really like The Box. I think Richard Kelly's... once again, I think regardless of how people feel about this movie, it is a tragedy that it basically kept him from making movies for the last 16 years. Because I think, regardless of anything, he's got a very unique voice and vision and perspective. And to have gotten no movies in going on almost 20 years is devastating.
It's crazy.
And do you know, I don't know, do you know if any of that has been by choice or has he been, like, or what opportunities? Because I know that, like, you can find in recent years him talking about, like, I want to make new Southland Tales stuff, which, as you said, probably not going to happen. But, like, has he tried to do anything else? Do you know?
For sure. I mean, I know that he has tons of projects that I think he's tried to get into production for years and years. So not just Southland Tales stuff. I mean... There are even recent interviews where he's like, I got four things ready to go or whatever it is. So I know he's trying. I just think the box also was not super well received didn't make a ton of money. And so I think he just wasn't seen as a good bet anymore. And I think time's probably just kind of passed him by a little bit. It's hard to, I don't know that he can trade on the Donnie Darko thing as much as he could. But I love that he was given $17 million, and this is what he decided to do with it. And I would imagine he'll make more movies. But
yeah, I hope so. And it does surprise me still that even though this bombed, it surprises me that it hit him career-wise so hard, because Donnie Darko is still huge. Yeah. Like, among
people
who watch
movies. I will say, I'm sure that if he said, I want to make a Donnie Darko sequel, I'm sure that they would fund that.
Please don't do a Donnie Darko. Well, didn't someone already do it? Not him.
S. Darko. Is. Yeah, haven't seen it, but.
I haven't either.
I have no interest in it.
Only bad things. But sure. Who knows? Maybe it's great. Maybe it's like the best movie ever made.
It probably
well,
is.
It's
probably
not,
better
it's
than
not, it's not Southland Tales.
True. Maybe it's the second best
that's
movie
what the,
ever
that's
made.
That's what the S in S Darko is.
Southland Darko?
Tales. Southland Tales Darko.
I have never seen a Letterboxd movie where all there are ratings all over the board. Usually it's kind of like either like, or it's kind of like the other way. It's crazy looking at the...
It's like, is it like a reverse bell curve, basically? Like ones and fives? And
it's interesting.
Yeah, I'd say like threes and fives are the highest, and then everything else is like not far behind.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Quote tennis?
Sure.
Cool. Austin, do you want to start us off?
Sure. I'll start with one of them. I mean, there's a lot of very funny quotes that I'm sure we'll go through.
Yep.
But I'll start with one that I think is actually a really great thesis statement for the entire movie that we hear a couple times, which is that it's a really nice inversion of that T.S. Eliot quote, which is, this is the way the world ends, not with a whimper, but with a bang, which I think describes the movie really well. It's kind of, you know, pardon the phrase, but it's like all bang. The whole movie is just like constant bang.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I think that that describes it really, really well. So that's always been a favorite quote of mine from this movie. Yeah.
For sure. I have, yes. Check this out, pig. Fascist dogma applied. Revolution by surprise. My vagina will not be denied a vote in your subjective election. That's an original poem by Dream. That's maybe my favorite part of the whole movie.
It's a good one. Scientists are saying the future is going to be far more futuristic than they originally predicted.
Maybe one of the greatest quotes of all time. And at least I'm not on Twitter anymore, but that was Richard Kelly's bio on Twitter the last time I was on there.
It still is because I looked at Richard Kelly's Twitter.
Incredible.
Yes.
This one that I just say to myself sometimes, which is nobody rocks the cock like Krista now. And I mean nobody.
That last part is very important. Yeah. And I mean nobody.
And I mean nobody.
Oh, we're a bisexual nation living in denial because of a bunch of nerds.
If you want to fuck me, you can fuck me now.
That's why your name's Krista now.
Yeah, that's very true.
We're just running through Krista now quotes. I mean, obviously, if you're listening to this, you should look up. There is a full song for Teen Horniness Is Not a Crime.
Of course there is.
But how have we not talked about she has a song called Teen Horniness Is Not a Crime, which is just a funny quote in and of itself.
Yes.
Teen Horniness Is Not a Crime. Open your heart and your mind. It's great. You should listen to it. But Bobby Frost is watching it and just kind of mutters to himself, I never said it was.
Yes, yeah, I never said it was. I do remember that.
I just love, this one came up already, but did I just see two cars porking each other?
Yep.
His fucking dick was 200 inches long.
That's quite impressive. The only other one that I had was, let's dry our tears and face our fears.
Which is just a good line. Absolutely.
You know, there would be a lot less violence in the world if everyone just got a little more cardio.
When is that?
Couldn't tell you. I think they're standing in the back of a truck.
I'm trying to find one very specifically that I want to make sure that I get it exactly right. It's another Krista Now quote, which is, join us for an in-depth discussion of the penetrating issues facing society today. Issues like abortion, terrorism, crime, poverty, social reform, quantum teleportation, teen horniness, and war.
Teen horniness and war.
I did find one more that I had forgotten about. Are you Deep Throat 2? I'm not in that movie.
And I would be, my last would be, I'd be remiss not to read the last line of the entire movie.
Oh, yeah.
Which is Revelation 21, and God wiped away the tears from his eyes so the new Messiah could see out to the new Jerusalem. His name was Officer Roland Taverner of Hermosa Beach, California. My best friend. He's a pimp, and pimps don't commit suicide.
That's very true. That's lovely. I think that's a great one to end it on.
I agree.
You have any more, Justin?
No. I mean, I do, but I don't want to end on, I want to end on that.
That's a great one. Cool.
Thanks for listening to Show Me the Movies and our discussion about Southland Tales. Email us at themoviesshowme@gmail.com with any questions or comments. And remember to follow us on only Instagram, not Blue Sky, because Nick said F you, Blue Sky.
No one's on there.
It's true. And we'll see you next time.
And always remember, maybe the baby's just constipated.
And always remember, nobody rocks the cock like Krista now. And I mean nobody.
Very true.